Absolutely. County Attorney Reynolds, how are you? Great job. All right, good morning. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, June 27, 2017. And ask if everyone would please silence their cell phones. And a point of personal privilege, I just saw my friend Wayne Clinton walk in the room, long-serving Board of Supervisors member. Wayne, welcome. We always are happy to see you. Now, if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. So the first item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on. One of the things that, boy, it's so appropriate, I don't necessarily like doing it because it means we're losing a phenomenal employee after a long-standing service to the county, but this will be our last board meeting with Don Tice still as an employee of Story County. It's really fitting, so just talking to Don before the meeting, so he spent 25 years maintaining our roads, now he's going to go out in hot rods and probably put some rubber down on roads some places, but Don, we are so appreciative of what you've done the last 25 years for the people of Story County, and we wanted to take just a minute to recognize that. We have a plaque, and we're going to do a photo right here. So the plaque says, Donald Ray Tice, in appreciation for 25 years of service to Story County, June 1992 to June 2017, Don, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we got pictures right here that everybody looked pretty.
Thank you, Don. I enjoyed riding with you.
She came and rode with me, and she had a job really well.
I did. Sorry.
Everybody good?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
All right, next item is consideration of authorization to enter into discussions with the Army Corps of Engineers for Memorandum of Understanding regarding a transfer of property to Story County. Boy, this has been a long process to even get to this point of considering this. How about starting with just kind of laying out the basics for everybody?
Sure. I was just going to say that we started on this project before Don started working for the county.
And you're not getting by about 25 years.
He's got a lot more work done than what we have with this project.
Ted Tedesco was a young man when we started on this.
That's right. Ted? I had dark hair. I had hair.
I want to give, I know we've got a couple, you know, new board members here, just so... So you know what we're chatting about. This is a map of that one or two. A map of the area there. We've been working on this for quite some time. This property that federal DOT acquired through state DOT when Interstate 35 was being... before Interstate 35 was constructed. Plans altered when the discussion of putting the Ames Lake came to the surface. And then with much discussion about Ames Lake, that did not happen. In the interim, the interstate rerouted in anticipation of a lake. And so the original north-south interstate corridor is now owned by the Corps of Engineers, has been for some time. So with the assistance of the county attorney's office and the supervisors, we have been working, and Ted's assistance was talking to our delegation in Washington, and Rick, you've done the same. So we had a lot of people involved in this process trying to move it forward. In 2008, we were successful in getting a the Congress to pass a bill that says the Corps of Engineers will give this property to the county fee simple, no charge. And they had 180 days to do it. That was 2008. And so we still struggle with this. We're still working toward it. The problem is that the Corps has a federal land disposal requirements that dictate lots of procedures. Survey work, archaeology work, environmental work, all of that. And that has costs, real costs that go with it. So what you see in front of you is the latest kind of a worksheet on the tasks involved and associated costs to actually get that land transferred. So the Corps is now willing to work with us and to allow the county to do some of those costs, to do some of those tasks in the effort or in the interest of lowering the costs to us. And then interested in us paying them for doing the work that they need to do. So, having said that, I guess we're today just want to have some discussion about that, answer your questions, and then are looking for your kind of tacit approval on moving ahead with negotiating a memorandum of understanding with the Corps that then we'll bring back to you when we're ready for final consideration.
Well, I think it's important, too, why is conservation involved? And it looks to the future. Currently, the land that the Corps owns is basically leased to a number of agricultural people. They're getting rent off of it every year. Not a whole lot. I think it's less than $20,000 of the whole strip. But we're looking at it from the standpoint that we can trade that land and get land along the Skunk and complete the greenbelt area that we identified and put in the C2C plant also. So it's an important step, and I think it would be important to the future generations.
Yeah, so Ted, I think that what you point out is really important. And I think also important to note is many of the landowners in this corridor actually own both sides of this strip of ground that's owned by the Corps, and some of them do in fact own some of the land along the Skunk River that conservation troops would be interested in. The other thing I'll point out is Torrey County Conservation was the spearhead behind getting this conversation started all the way back to, I think it was 1974, when it became evident that the interstate was not going to use this routing. Story County Conservation stepped in at that point and has been consistent all the way through. And then a couple other things to note. Previous board, actually one that Wayne Clinton sat on, voted in fact for Story County to pay all actual costs associated with facilitating this transfer. And the memorandum of understanding that came out of that was never executed. And from my own personal perspective, because it wasn't exactly what we thought we were agreeing to when we moved into those negotiations, through a lot of hard work from a lot of people, most notably Senator Grassley's office, but you can't leave out Senator Ernst or Congressman King because they
went back to Representative Latham.
Well, Representative Latham is the one who put it in, got it put in the 2008 bill that supposedly we were supposed to get it free in 180 days. And clearly we're nowhere close to that. We've had two conference calls with the new leadership from the Corps of Engineers. I think it'd be fair to represent to this board that those have been positive, feels like advancing kind of calls. And now we're to the point that it's time to see if we're really going to do this or not. This is about 200 acres of ground. And we're talking about a cost to Story County somewhere in the $120,000 to $180,000 range to pick up, depending on how much work we're able to do in-house and how much we can't do in-house, to pick up that 200 acres. What else would you add for this board to know before we consider this?
That's a lot cheaper than we started out. It was about $250,000.
Without any kind of acknowledgement of there's a cap.
Yeah.
Questions, board?
I assume the cost, the determinations who pays what or who gets charged what is a federal thing, because I see they do waive some of the cost to get to the $1 figure.
So that the chart you're looking at, yep, the those costs are generated by the Army Corps. Those are their costs if they were going to do those actions. Some of those actions they have said that they'll allow the county to do. Mm-hmm. They'll review those and allow, make sure they meet the requirements of the Corps, but they'll allow us to do those. And so, in essence, to try to save some money. Some of those we will be able to do in-house, and some of those we would have to contract out for anyway. And so we'll have that discussion with them.
And in initial looks at the stuff that we would have to contract out for, what they're quoting us, we believe, is pretty similar to what it really would cost us. There does not seem to be a real inflation on the
Correct.
Cost that they're putting in on these.
Correct.
Items.
Correct.
Does
that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I didn't expect that, you know, if the federal comes to the county level and they're going to determine what and how much, but it's had a real Charlie Brown feel about it. We keep trying to kick the ball and we keep getting yanked because, good morning, Wayne. One of the first things Wayne did when I got here was throw a big binder down on my desk and said, this is what Rick's in Washington, D.C. doing this at this time, and you need to look at it. And I think it tethers from 1971 or 1972. Does that sound about right?
Mm-hmm.
And you would think, okay, if this has been something they purposely were walking back from, this had already been way in the rearview mirror, but it's not. We were looking at it in 2017. And a lot of people have put touches on it. The county has tried as much as they can to get us to this date, and I would only hope through an MOU today that we are putting our final touches on it, but I'm not going to believe it until it's a done thing.
And yeah, to be clear, we would then come back to you once we have a draft negotiation that we work through with the attorney, and we would then come back to you for final consideration on that MOU.
Okay.
I think Rich made an important point. There's been a change of personnel at the Corps of Engineers office. Earlier on, there were not very many cooperative people down there.
That's
and there were a number of sheets that we got that they charged for one thing and turned around at the end and charged you for that same thing again.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't say very nice words about them several times.
So, and I think it's fair to note that former County Attorney Holmes was heavily involved in this.
Yes.
And in fact, he took a trip to Rock Island to meet with our local Corps of Engineers. And I don't want to put words in Stephen's mouth, but I got the distinct impression that he was really frustrated at the obstruction that he saw going on from the local. I've actually made 3 trips now out to Washington, not entirely about this, but with this on the topic of conversation. And it's really exciting to me that it feels like, again, somebody mentioned Charlie Brown. Now, this could very easily be a Charlie Brown moment where we think we're getting ready to kick the football and we're going to get yanked out again. But dadgum it, Charlie Brown always believes he's going to kick it, and that's exactly where I am. So it's my belief and expectation that there's $75,000 in this of the 192. So it's 182.3 if we had the Corps do everything, plus a $10,000 contingency, 192.3. But as we look at this, initial conversations, not binding in any way, looks like there's about $75,000 worth of work that either we can get waived or we can do our get waived via other avenues or do ourselves.
Yeah, he's still working on that some.
Sure.
Some investigatory work there. I'm very confident that there's $40,000 of that we can do ourselves.
Right, and 35 is kind of...
35 is a question.
Yep. So what I believe we're looking at here is if we support going forward with getting the MOU, we should expect to see an MOU minimum bottom line would be $117.3 that we would see. And realistically, it's going to cost us more than that, whether that money is directly paid to the Corps or it's paid to an outside entity doing some of this work. And I believe, all said and done, the cheapest this is going to be for us is somewhere in the 150 to 160 range, and it could go all the way up to 190, depending on what happens. Again, that's all numbers we would get to see as part of an MOU. This board would get to act on those. Today's action is simply, does this board have an appetite to pursue the MOU and pursue getting this done? I think it's important that you guys have all the facts as we know them before you make a decision like that.
I also remember sitting out there and watching and hearing, seeing a lot of frustration over the years. Okay. Thank you, Rick, for having tenacity in this issue.
Me with tenacity? Oh, that's shocking.
So anyway, my question is, going forward with this, where is the money going to come from? And can you remind me, Mike, exactly what the plan is? Is this part of the rebuild trail? Or?
So I guess, like Ted said, as far as our plans with this property, we would like to, if you will, kind of relocate resources from this corridor. If the sections of this corridor that aren't on the greenbelt or aren't along the river, we'd like to shift those resources over to along the river. Whether that be a land swap, whether that be, you know, a sale and purchase, but we'd like to shift those resources over to the river to improve the continuity of our system along the river. Mm-hmm.
So it mentions the preservation covenant. Mm-hmm. And that would qualify for preservation covenant, correct?
I mentioned earlier, part of the process with this, any federal land disposal, and not just federal, but part of this process is to do a cultural resource inventory, i.e. archaeology. We are hoping that, and some preliminary discussion has led us to think that there is some potential to shy of doing a larger inventory and a larger research project, which will cost $80,000, that we can use inventories and that have already been done, and there have been resources identified, mm-hmm. that we can, instead of doing more research, that we can say we are going to protect those, we are going to place covenants on those cultural sites that are in this 200 acres, instead of doing that other work. So we're hoping to work with the State Historic Preservation Office to be able to do that. That's really the $40,000 that we talk about us doing, is negotiating that and brokeraging that, those covenants with SHPO, State Historic Preservation Office, and the Army Corps. So does that answer
does.
Your question?
It does. It helps put it all back in my mind. Thank you.
Good. Other questions?
Just last for clarity, so adoption or just movement on this MOU doesn't commit any county dollars. It just starts the process in hopes of moving to that point.
You're not committing any money today.
No. This is not the MOU. This is us saying that we are interested in seeing the MOU.
Okay. No dollars.
Nothing. We're not committing to anything at this point, other than we want to continue to utilize conservation and county attorney's office to negotiate an MOU.
Got it.
I would move that we direct staff and the conservation board to enter into, would it be called negotiations on an MOU, to be brought back to the Board of Supervisors at a later date.
Second.
Yeah, that works absolutely. Other questions or comments, board? Mike or Ted, anything to add? Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. We'll look forward to seeing the MOU. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
We're to agency reports. Department of Human Services, Pauline Rutherford. Well, I don't think Pauline's here. Pauline's not here. Youth and Shelter Services, and I know it's not Andrew.
Give me.
So we get Jason, absolutely. We're so glad you're here.
Hi.
Glad to be here.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, good morning, everybody. Andrew does send his best. Unfortunately, we got double booked. Joe Girardi from the Yankees did a visit today, and we had a donor event, so that got scheduled at the last minute. So he did pick the Yankees over you guys. I hope you will forgive us.
I think you picked donors over us, and that's always okay.
Then you know Andrew well. Well, first, you know, I just want to start with, you know, this is a different process. You know, we usually come here much more frequently, so I kind of miss seeing you, Rick. Some new faces on the board. It's great, Loris and Marty, to see you guys. You know, what I really want to do is just step back and give you an overview of all the changes that we've done here at YSS over the last year. You know, I think just to clarify, I'm Jason Hagland. I'm the director, division director of prevention and treatment. So over the course of the last year, 2 years since Andrew took the helm from George, you know, we've really seen the expansion of what we do at YSS. So, you know, as we look to the future, as we look to the foundation that George laid, we really looked forward to what is YSS best at. You know, that started with the rebranding. And so as you look at the material in front of you, that's our latest annual report. It came out 3 or 4 months ago, but you can see it kind of has a different look and a feel. And so, you know, one of the things that we did is we kind of went back to just calling ourselves YSS. That's what we're known for. But we really went out with a campaign of Youth Standing Strong. And so when you think about YSS and what we do and our target focus and mission, it's really about how we help youth stand strong, how we help families stand strong, how we help communities stand strong. So as we think about moving forward, as you flip through those pages, you know, you really think about the areas that we serve kids in. And so that's really in the areas of treatment, prevention, and transition. So when we think about what we do holistically across the lifespan, what we do here in the community and in Story County, it really serves kids and families in those core areas. So as we, you know, talk about the programs, I know you guys all received a whole bunch of information from us. I hope you took a minute to read that. Here in a minute, I'm going to have Jerry Bug and Barb come up and talk to you about some specific programs. But really, you know, we just want to give you the opportunity to talk with us. You know, I don't want to sit up here and talk to you and drag it on, you know, as we may or may not have sometimes in the past. I know you guys have a busy schedule. But
George was always really informative.
I know he was. And hopefully I can share some information with you as well. I do want to highlight our core values. You know, one of the things that we've really refined is what we stand for. And so our core values are around the areas, and you can see in the annual report there, commitment, collaboration, compassion, innovation, integrity, and can-do spirit. Our staff and our service really is going to embody those things as it does today, but as we look at new services and new outreach that we do, we're really going to look at those areas. We're going to focus on what we're unique in. You know, we really went back and said, what are we unique in? Over the last 41 years, what has YSS really grown to be, and how are we unique from other nonprofits? When we look around the state and across the country, and one of the biggest things we are is our community-based approach. So the fact that I'm here talking with you and engaging with you at this level, we're community-based. We look differently in every community we're in because we adapt and we fill the need in those communities. You know, and that's one of our strengths. We do that better than anyone else. We're not a cookie cutter where we go into a community and say you need this and dictate that. We listen. And we make changes programmatically, structurally, based upon what each community needs. We're comprehensive. We're one of the most comprehensive nonprofits across the state of Iowa, and really we say across the nation. So we think about the comprehensive array of services from community and youth and family development, prevention programs, before and after school, when we think about Kids Club, to our treatment. We think about, you know, not only do we do in-home services, we do therapy, we do medication management for pediatrics, and we really focus on those specialty populations. So that comprehensiveness is unlike many other agencies that you see today. And finally, we're a leader in collaboration. We know when we can't do it, and we collaborate with others to do it. We lead statewide networks. We lead statewide collaborations. We lead grants with Parkland Services, one of our largest grants, the Iowa Aftercare Network. Is a $4 million contract we have with the state of Iowa that we partner with 8 other agencies. Because we don't want to be the one agency that does it all. We want to partner with those who are also part of other communities throughout the state. So it's not about YSS being bigger. It's about YSS collaborating and making families stronger and doing what's best for kids. So we really want to focus on these uniques, and we want to move those moving forward. And finally, I just want to touch base on our 5 strategic commitments. What is it that we're really focused on this year and year over year, and what are we talking with our staff about? Because I think it's important as we think about that, what is it we want to do? Number one, we talk about brand. We really want to change our brand. We really, we aren't just a shelter. Although Rosedale Shelter is key to our core business and a big part of what we do and a very important part here in Story County. 1 year ago, we merged with Francis Lauer Youth Services in Mason City. We also have a shelter there as well. Really we see ourselves going up the I-35 corridor to the north, providing these very necessary services, but really a very small part of overall the business we do at YSS. And unfortunately, it stigmatized us to some level that when you think about youth and shelter services, you think about a shelter. You don't think of all the good work we're doing in schools. You don't think about us as being a leader in medication management for pediatrics. You think about a shelter. So we really want to think about our brand and how do we move away from that messaging and think differently about all of the different programs that we have. Operational effectiveness. We have to be more efficient. When we look at the budget cuts that are going on right now, we're taking huge hits across our programs from state budget considerations federally. We don't know what's happening to some of our larger block grants. We have several federal grants that we have right now that are in limbo that we're just not sure what's going to happen. So we know that in order to deliver the services that we do, to continue to be that backbone in the community, we're going to have to find other ways to save. And already as a nonprofit, we're pretty lean, let me tell you. But we have to get leaner to make it through these very tough economic times. And so we really have to figure out how do we become more efficient internally. People. We know that people are the backbone of everything we do. Today at YSS, we have 426 employees. Now, I'll remind you, in 2014, we had 286. So we've seen a rapid growth in staff. Now, that includes the merger of Francis Lauer and Mason City. But we're really growing. We have a lot of opportunities. But we really have to look at how do we invest in our people and how do we have the very best of the best, because that's really very important. Here in Story County, it is a very tough market. We compete for employees who work for university. It is very difficult as a nonprofit to be an employer in Story County, and that creates challenges. It creates challenges for places, even for staff to live. And so we really are focused on people and how do we make this a better experience for them. Innovation. We don't ever want to stop innovating. I think, when we look back to our founder and what George instilled in all of us who worked alongside George, was he was always innovating, always pushing the envelope forward. And as Andrew certainly doesn't have any lack of interest in innovating and doing things better. And so we're focused on that. And finally, community engagement. We need to stay focused on the community and the needs of the community and being engaged with them. So really, I just want you to know that's our overall focus. We look at this every quarter. Every one of our teams, we have quarterly goals. Really looked at how we become efficient overall. And that's just been a great opportunity as we move forward, as we strategically plan, and as we work with you moving forward around what the needs of the county are, what the needs of local communities are. It really helps us to get focused and strategic direction. We'll talk to you just for a minute about shelter. There's many changes to the shelter RFP. The C-West contracts are out. We're still in the middle of negotiating that, organizing that. That starts July 1st. Those changes will have impacts on local kids. We took a 20% cut across both of our shelters financially, which limits access to kids, runaways, who need shelter in Story County. Now, I know, we're working with juvenile court, DHS, to really look at what the ramifications of that are locally, and we'll continue to keep you updated on that as that moves forward. Medicaid, as a safety net provider for pediatrics and kids and families in Story County, the ongoing Medicaid crisis, we can't pick up the register and not read about Medicaid. We still are owed dollars starting over 18 months ago. For services that we've delivered, for therapy, psychiatric services, and in-home services. So it's concerning. It's very concerning looking ahead that you know, we read in the paper. I picked up the paper this morning. I stopped reading the paper, by the way. But if 22 million people really are going to go uninsured, how many of those are going to be kids and families in Story County? And then who's going to be responsible for that, and how are we going to fulfill that need? So we're very concerned about that. You know, our goal is to make sure kids are served, and that we have access points for kids who need medication, for those who are severely mentally ill, and for those who suffer from addiction disorders. We know with kids, the sooner that we can assess, address, and deal with those issues, the more likely they are to be successful, meaning they're going to graduate from high school and be you know, adults who can be employed and give back to their communities. So we don't want to give up hope on our prevention activities, our early intervention activities, and our abilities to be responsive and react to that. However, we have to be very cognizant of the funding that has to happen so that we can do that work and get it done. Overall, I'm going to let some of the community trends go to Jerry and Barb, who can talk about that a lot more. Finally, just from an administrative aspect, as you know, as an employer of 426 employees, with our funding mechanisms continually going down and the cost of operating business going up. Last year, we had a 46% to our health care benefits for our employees. Mm-hmm. This year, we're looking at a 30% increase. So in those 2 years, that's nearly $500,000 added to our operating budgets, just so that we can insure our employees. Most of our contracts are being cut at a state level and a federal level, and our Medicaid payments haven't changed for a decade. So as a safety net provider who bulk of their business comes from that, it's becoming harder and harder. There's only so far you can cut before you start cutting services. And so I just want to be transparent with the board of those are some very real challenges that we face in the community. That makes it difficult for us to innovate. So I talk about the vision and focus, what we want to do. So, you know, that is why Andrew is fundraising today, because in order for us to continue our mission, it's going to be based upon private donations and our ability to find braided funding mechanisms so that we can carry it forward and do the work that we do. Do you have any questions for me? Because I do want to give a few minutes just for Jerry.
Yeah, so we want to hear the highlights from Jerry and Barb. But so I've said before, you've heard me say before, I'm sure you'll hear me say again because I truly believe it. Story County, heck, Central Iowa and all of Iowa is a better place because of YSS. You know, we thank your founder profusely every time he came. This board has thanked Andrew when he's been here. We'll thank you now and ask that you take it back. Story County is well served by YSS, and we do live in a changing climate. I mean, the dichotomy of what you just said, your concerns over the possibility of 22 million people losing health insurance, and the reality that you guys' health insurance rates have gone up over 75% in the last 2 years. We got to figure out how to pull those two things together, and there aren't simple answers, and there sure aren't answers that are helpful when we start pointing at each other, making blame. We need to dig in and get solutions, and I'm really proud out of in a community where we've got somebody like YSS who helps provide those solutions. So thank you. Questions or comments for Andrew, and then we're going to get to Jerry and Barb, the highlights of what's in
just
it.
The highlights.
Just the highlights.
Yep. I think my questions are probably for Jerry or Barb.
Great. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Jerry Bug, Community Youth and Family Development Director.
And I'm Barb Biersner, the Mentoring Program Coordinator.
Do you want to start, Barb? Sure. We're talking a little bit about mentoring. We had really hoped we were bringing a whole team, you know. But we have over 600 kids in summer programs throughout the county, and people call in sick, and we're the ones, Barb and I, get out there.
That's right.
Yeah. So, again, I'm the Mentoring Program Coordinator. In Story County, we serve Ames, Ballard, Gilbert, and Nevada school districts. At one time, we did serve Collins Maxwell. Last year, they decided they wanted to implement the program on their own. But through discussions, it is a possibility that we will go back in this school year with our facilitator and implement the program. they've always been extremely supportive, and so that is a good thing. This year we served 239 children in Story County in grades K through 8. Currently we have 20 on the waiting list for this coming fall. We are a school-based program. This program that I'm talking about right now, we have another program also, but for the school-based, so the mentors and mentees do not meet during the school year. So everybody will get started back in the fall.
They meet only in the school year.
Yeah, they meet in the school year. I'm sorry. So we have 20 on the waiting list, which means that waiting list is 20 students that we have permission slips for from their parents. We will get a lot more referrals as the school year gets started.
And you have capacity right now for 239, is that what I've
right.
heard?
Right, for the past school year, for the 2017 school year.
Which is driven by number of mentors available.
Correct. Correct. The teachers, parents, other school staff will refer the child to the program, and then we then search or find volunteers and train those volunteers to become mentors for the child. And they meet during the school year. We ask the mentors to meet once a week for 45 minutes to an hour once a week. And we ask for one school year commitment, but our goal is that the mentor will continue on with that child and prove it to the next school year.
And what is your retention rate of mentors generally? Do you know that off the top of your head?
We do track duration, 2 or more years, and our goal is that 50% of our matches are 2 or more years duration. Right now I don't have the numbers for this year. We're in the process of getting our data for this school year, but I will have those numbers.
We run pretty close to that every year. It's, you know, somewhere in that 40 to 50 range.
Also, we do track our outcomes. We do pre- and post-surveys with our mentors, our students, our mentees. That would be the children in the mentoring program. We teacher surveys pre-post for academic, behavior, relationships, and such. Again, that data is just coming in, so I don't have those specific results for you today, but I can get those to you at a later date. What we do have, which is probably my favorite thing, is at the end of the school year, we also ask the mentees, which are the children, some questions about what their experience was like with the mentoring program. And one of the questions we ask is, since I was matched with my mentor, and then we say, and my grades are, and they have a choice. They could say they're better, they're the same, or they're worse. This year, 78% said that their grades are much better. Their interest in school, 75% said their interest in school was better since they were matched with their mentor. I get along at home, and 58% said they get along at home better. 77% said their friendships are better since having been matched with a mentor. And 75% said they had more interest in learning new things. And then a few, we had 201 responses for that survey. So I won't give you all 201 things that the kids also said about having a mentor, but I'll highlight a few. Since what has having my mentor meant to you? One child said, my mentor is my world. I have a good friend with me at all times. It's good, awesome, amazing. It feels good and makes me like school better. And we also asked the mentors also about the program. A comment from a mentor was, visiting my buddy every Monday is what makes my day. I personally adore the program and wish that it would have been available to me when I was a child. This has made me a better person, and I feel I've impacted my mentee's life. And one comment, we have numerous comments from parents, too. I'm just going to real quickly give you a little background. This child's father passed away during the school year, and we asked the parent, you know, asked for comments from the parents also. The child's name, I'm just going to use the first initial, so it's first initial J. The parent said, Jay's mentor has been great. He went above and beyond with Jay during a hard time in his life. Jay proudly introduced people to his mentor, and his mentor proudly introduced Jay. Jay even said it would be okay if his mentor wanted to adopt him. That says it all. And one program, a new program that we started implementing just this past February, is community-based mentoring. YSS saw the need that we needed to provide mentoring services to the clients that are in our residential and treatment programs and our transitional living program. So we did, we have a halftime facilitator, Nick, who is working hard on starting that program and getting volunteers from the community and matching them up with these clients at YSS. With community-based, that means it's on an individual basis, but it might not actually be on site. They'll be doing things out in the community also with their mentor or with their mentee.
Barb, thank you. Question for Barb?
So what is involved in becoming, you say mentor training, what does that involve?
We have an application process for all our mentors, and we have facilitators that support all the potential mentors, volunteers for the program. After the initial application, the facilitator will meet with the potential mentor, and then we have a very detailed training that is required before we match that volunteer up with the child or mentee. It's a little bit different. Our community-based training looks a little bit different than our school-based training. It's typically an hour to hour and a half training, initial training. This covers all the programs, all the questions, all the guidelines, all the risk management parts of the of the process.
The school doing any solicitation on your behalf for the mentor?
Oh yes, the schools are really supportive. We do have even some school staff in some of our communities that mentor. Some of the school support staff in the schools that volunteer to mentor also. So the schools are very supportive.
Two of the Story County school districts also give us dollars to help support it. Mm-hmm. Ballard and Gilbert.
Okay. Laura?
I just have questions about, I think, what Jerry
said.
Okay. Thanks, Barb.
And this is why Barb has been in that position for 18 years since the beginning of our mentoring program. Her passion. We gave you lots of information. The prevention programs cover over 4,500 kids in these reports. Kids were seeing in a lot of our after school and youth development programs are needier kids, lots of issues they're dealing with.
Right.
We're partnering with our mental health services and getting them help when we can, seeing a lot more behavior problems than in the past. But we're working with training our staff and getting us better prepared for it. We are bursting at the seams. This summer we added Collins Maxwell as a summer enrichment program. Maybe should have rethought that, but we're doing Collins Maxwell, Nevada, and Ames for a summer 6-week summer enrichment programs. Collins Maxwell is 4 weeks, and well over 300 kids in that program. So it's very busy, and then our kids club enrollments are all up too. So. What used to be kind of a relaxing summer is no more.
There's no such thing anymore.
Days of the past. So I did want to share with you the Iowa U survey, hot off the press. And if you remember, this is done every 2 years. This past year in 2016, Ballard and Gilbert did not participate, and Gilbert hasn't, and for quite a few years, none of this. They do their own survey. Things are looking better based on the survey, and we hope that many of our programs are help with that, lowering. We're seeing, changing attitudes about marijuana because of the whole medical and organic and all that. But we continue, Jane in her report about substance abuse talks a lot about re-messaging that to kids and really... having some concerns for some of the schools. It's a bigger concern than others. Some of the facts that aren't reflected here that I thought of interest were 36% of the kids reported being bullied in the last 30 days, and only 60% of them feel that teachers and other adults are putting a stop to bullying. Mm-hmm. Now, those are kids' perceptions.
Still important.
Yeah, very important. 12% had suicidal thoughts in the past month. 21% are gambling for money or possessions in the last 30 days. And then 82% of all the kids felt that harming, using violence was not the way to solve problems. 82%, but that still is 18%. That are feeling it might be an option. So, interesting, it's online if you want it. We typically give them each for each school district. We have not gotten those yet, but those will come. But I thought you'd be interested.
Absolutely. In well, Jerry, thanks. Let's go right to Laura's questions and see if we get a comprehensive list here.
Okay. This is off of the report we received that was a quarterly report, kind of recapping juvenile court services.
Oh, right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I noticed some reduction in the numbers in some areas of service. For example, the crisis intervention unit. Last year, for the full year, we had 757 people, so I divided by math, and then, you know, we talk about third quarter. And there were only 113 people, units, I guess is what's reported. So why is there a drop in crisis intervention?
You know, that
oh,
is.
So, all right.
So it's Mr. Hagelin's.
Okay.
Thanks, Laura.
Sure, Jason, I'm sorry. Also, I noticed that the number, there was a little bit of a reduction in chemical dependency outpatient student assistance. I noticed that there were fewer clients in transitional living and lighthouse programs, but the number of days served, units were up. So is there a trend here, or am I just picking various?
You have three trends there, Laura. So I'm going to try to go backwards and hit every one of your points. So I think it's safe to say the kids in TLP are staying longer. That's why you're seeing less kids. So part of that's a systems issue, so transitional living. We are case managing those kids longer, which is part of the HUD initiative to get longer stability. So part of that is by design. Part of that is we're part of a federal pilot project that some of those kids are actually diverted out. So actually our TLP program is shrinking because there's less money from HUD to do some of those types of programming. And so there's a shift happening within those programs. So that's part of the inconsistencies with the TLP programs. The part of the data that you see between addiction and mental health issues, so part of that is internally, you know, we've been talking for years and years and years about co-occurring treatment and being co-occurring capable. Really, we're over the top on that now, that we have a team of 30 licensed mental health clinicians. Now, just because we label a mental health clinician doesn't mean it's not within their scope of practice to treat kids with addiction. So we've really changed our workforce. It used to be traditionally you'd have certified addictions counselors or substance abuse counselors that had a bachelor's degree, and really their scope of practice are only on those addictive disorders. What we've moved to is more of a specialty care therapeutic component where we have licensed clinicians who are specialized in kids and transitional age youth who treating their addiction is right alongside treating their anxiety, their depression, and all of the other issues that come with that. You just don't treat addiction in a silo. You also have to treat the underlying depression, anxiety, trauma history, and everything else we know today as part of the science. So sometimes those are now being coded as mental health clients. At one point, then we used to differentiate those out. So as we move forward, you're going to probably see a collapse of that we treat kids for the behavioral health issues, and we treat families for that. So we could be treating mom, we could be treating the kid. So you're going to see that data kind of change. And so as we move forward, I think you're going to see those trends. So as we collapse data together, it's going to be a little harder to look backwards and see that. But we'll collapse the historical data as well. So then we can see those trend lines, Laura. So off the cuff, your third question. I'm listening. I should be a politician.
You are, whether you want to admit it or not. Yeah.
Was it regarding the crisis units? I'll have to go back and look into that. So I'm not exactly sure. I think that actually went to another category. And so I think we just need to look at where that fell out. Because it's not that we're not doing the same amount. So this year, I just got a report yesterday. Actually, this morning I got an email that we've done twice as many initial assessments this month than we did last year for the same month. So we went from 40 initial evals in a month to 84. We've seen our trend line of kids, total kids served out of our Ames clinic. We're up well over 1,000 active patients today. Last year at this time, it was below 700. And that's encompassing beyond just Story County, but it gives you the trend line that we're seeing a lot more volume and a lot more service delivery. So we also see it happening in Story County. We're seeing a lot more volume of
sure,
Story County
residents. Sure, but important to note that last year's number, at 757, was four quarters of data.
Right, this is only
444 is only three quarters.
It's only three quarters of data.
Yep.
Right, it still wasn't on trend, but I think I could get back to you on that and email you.
Okay, well, and I appreciate it because you mentioned that the juvenile justice meeting, the last juvenile justice meeting, something about Mason City and they knew who their community health.
Right. So
on June 30th, which is like 4 days from now or something, because of lack of funding. I then went to the CFR meeting a couple days after that and heard that demand for crisis stabilization services is up quite a bit, and then we've had discussions here. So
yeah, you're very lucky to have a stable mental health base in Story County. I'm actually on my way to Mason City right after this because of a collapsing community mental health center there. There's many areas of the state that are struggling greatly. There's many counties who will be without safety net mental health services because of these transitions. So we're very lucky to have the resources that we have here in Story County.
And we're lucky to have your support now and in the past because we couldn't do it without it.
And in the future.
Any other questions for Jerry or Jason?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, that takes us to consideration of minutes from June 20th.
I would move acceptance of the minutes as written.
Second.
Motion and a second. No notations or additions?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions, board, I want to pull Deb Shildroff off of our personnel actions. We'll consider that. We got an item on the agenda with Deb later on. We'll consider that at that point. Any other changes? And if not, I'd take a motion on personnel actions.
Move as presented.
Second.
Noting that Deb will be pulled off of that.
Yes.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consideration of claims.
Move consideration.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda board. Anything we need to pull?
Yes, I would like to pull the Sheriff Department's contract or addendum to an existing contract. It's item number six, I believe.
Item six, so between Story County and United States Department of Justice to include immigration and customs enforcement.
Correct.
Okay, so with that pulled, do I have a motion?
I so move that we accept the rest of the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consideration of addendum to the Intergovernmental Service Agreement between the United States Department of Justice and Story County to include immigration and customs enforcement to the initial agreement that was signed, and I actually looked at this, it was Wayne Clinton who signed it, November 4th, 2003. Sheriff and John, I'd ask you guys to come up and address this for the board, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And a bonus, County Attorney Jessica Reynolds.
Good morning.
All right, so take us through what's happening here with the request for the addendum.
Well, we have had a long-standing contract with the United States Marshal Service, and ICE has contacted us to hold their inmates as well. So we have drawn up an agreement. They've, instead of having a separate contract with ICE, they are doing an addendum to the Marshal's contract, and that's what we're asking for the board to agree and support today.
Mm-hmm. doesn't change anything that we've been doing for years and years. Story County has a longstanding practice of only holding people with a valid warrant. This wouldn't change that.
Or a statement of probable cause signed by a lawful judicial officer.
But just somebody calling you doesn't do that for you.
And I just wanted to weigh in on this as the county attorney. I just wanted to make sure the board understood that this contract that's already in effect is separate and distinct from any type of probable cause holding for ICE. So what this is an overflow agreement that we have with currently the federal government, that we have with other county jails, that when there are inmates in custody of other legal entities, in their care, custody, and control, we provide housing. So that's separate and distinct from statement of probable cause and those types of things, because they're already in the custody of the feds.
So my two questions that I sent were, number one, do we have to do this, or is this a voluntary action?
Well, I've always had a strong working relationship with the federal government. I've had a strong working relationship with state and local law enforcement as well. And in just of that, I will hold prisoners that are lawfully arrested or a warrant or appropriate affidavit signed with probable cause. That's been our standard, our practice for over the years, and so that's what I, as sheriff, will do.
Mm-hmm.
Your question, do I have to? Well, I look at the duties of sheriff outside of the political arena. And whether I agree with political sides or not, I view that law enforcement, our duty is to enforce the laws as written by the legislature and interpreted by the courts. And that's what we have done. In times when the court has not weighed in, we interpret the laws and do so in what we feel is best guidance. The detainers, I chose not to hold on detainers because they do not have a warrant and they do not have a signed affidavit by local or federal law enforcement. And that was also under the guidance of the Attorney General of the state of Iowa and in agreement with our own county attorney. So I feel we're on solid ground. First and foremost, I want to look out for Story County and for the people within Story County. And that also includes protecting from liability. So that's why we did not hold and still do not hold detainers without probable cause or a valid arrest warrant.
Thank you. That helped clarify the difference in my mind, even. All right. And I appreciate you taking the time to explain that and that difference.
Yeah, and I just want to say how appreciative I am to live in a place where we have a sheriff who enforces the law, not just the laws that the sheriff agrees with or likes or appreciates. I wish it were true in 100% of the places that the people sworn to uphold the law just upheld the law. And if we need to change the laws, let's change the laws. So I want to thank you, Paul, and Jessica. I know your office does exactly the same thing. Most interested in what the law is, not what maybe we wish it would be. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I suspect there's a positive financial component to this, too.
Looks like $21,000. Yeah, I mean, it was much bigger back when we had Wayne up here signing it. It feels like it was a couple hundred thousand, so we're losing ground. Do I have a motion for this one?
I move consideration of accepting the addendum of the Intergovernmental Service Agreement between the United States Department of Justice and the Story County Sheriff's Office.
Aye.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Sheriff, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so that gets us through consent agenda. No public hearing items today. Additional items. Oh, now it's the Lisa Markley hour. Consideration will start with Resolution 17-109.
It's not an hour, it's 4 minutes.
Okay, let's go.
Or so.
Appropriations amendment for this fiscal year.
This fiscal year ends Friday for us. The last claims, and you just approved the last claims, about $900,000. And the last payroll will happen Friday. So I am requesting that we appropriate a few additional dollars in a few departments to make sure that Lisa can...
You want to make sure you actually have the money to do what we just approved?
Right. I want to sleep at night.
All right.
So I have conservation. The remaining dollars of theirs is $84,620. And I'm thinking they're going to need most of that. IRBM, $5,224. Human Services Center, $6,920. Facilities Management, $7,512. IT, $24,861, and Juvenile Court, $13,850. That will give those all 100% appropriation. The remaining departments did not need 100% appropriation, except for the elected officials.
Super. Questions or a motion, Board?
I would move approval of Resolution 17-109.
Second.
Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. All right. 17-110.
Okay, so now we're going to start the next fiscal year. Let's go to FY18 real fast.
Done with 17. Let's go to 18.
We're done. All right. Let's go to 18. So beginning July 1st, in order for the departments to spend the dollars that you budgeted, you need to appropriate dollars. So this resolution actually appropriates 50% for all departments with the exception of General County Betterment and Countywide Services, which are appropriated off the bat at 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And this is long standing. 3 or 4 years we've been doing it this way.
Correct. More than that, probably.
Okay. Board, questions?
Nothing. This is business as SOP.
So, motion.
Motion to move Resolution 17-110.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 17-110 passes. 17-111.
17-111. I could perhaps hold this off until later, a little bit later in the year, but I go ahead and do it right now because it's easier. This is also FY18 appropriation or operating transfers. This is budgeted transfers that during the budget process we put together and said, yes, we're going to transfer these dollars. So I just put it in the resolution form because we don't have the authority to do that until you approve it.
Questions?
None.
Motion.
Move adoption of Resolution 17-111.
Second.
Further discussion? Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
17-111 passes. Oh, about 4 minutes. Absolutely. Very good.
Thank you.
Good. Check, check, check. All right. Discussion and consideration of recommended consultant for the secondary road building improvements, the Kelly Shed and the Roland Shed, construction and architectural design services. Darren, Deb, who else is on that with you? Cal Pearson?
And Leanne.
And Leanne. Okay. So the four of you.
Okay.
Hi, Darren.
Hello. Good morning. As you know, we're proposing two new building structures, so we're hiring architectural services for both. We had two submittals, Rosa Mackey Harris and Halo Architecture, both out of Ames. We evaluated both as part of our committee. They were both very similar, both very well-qualified applicants. I think about the only difference we could find was Hala has some very relevant experience, very similar to what we're doing, tight spaces, looking at turning movements of large vehicles. So we like that experience. So that was our recommendation.
Super. Questions?
I think it speaks for itself. We have two facilities that we appropriated monies on. We went out and found what we believe to be the best people to help us do it. And I think that's where we are.
And I'll just note, we've used Roswell Mackey for several things and have been just thrilled with their services. I don't recall us using Halo at this point, but it seems reasonable to me that we would use somebody with really relevant experience here. I know they have a great reputation.
We used Halo for the remodel of the community services space.
Oh, good.
When we moved downstairs in the Human Services Center. So we've got that connection with them.
True.
I found it interesting how close the quotes were, also less than $1,000. I would move that we accept staff recommendation and take the Hala Architecture proposal.
I would second that with my thanks to Darren, Deb, Leanne, and Cal for the efforts they put into getting us here.
100%. Absolutely. Further comments? Deb, Darren, anything to add?
Do we need to direct county attorney to
Yeah, so I think part of the deal, if we adopt this, is it automatically goes to the county attorney to enter into the contract negotiation.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, further discussion?
Yeah.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is discussion consideration of appointing a designated representative for Crestview Mobile Home Park. We got Ethan listed on here. Since Ethan's not here, I think Jessica will be part of this conversation. But as I understand it, it is simply to have one member of the Board of Supervisors work with Ethan to make sure that we're moving down the right path. It doesn't give that person any authority to make decisions on behalf of the board or any enter into any agreements. It's simply having one of us represent as we go through those talks of where this is all going to end up.
I think as we have navigated this sometimes by the moment, Marty Chitty has taken the lead on this so far and has kept many of us moving forward in how we should without breaking any problems with the open meetings law. And I'm sure Marty has had some conversations we're not even aware of that have been stressful. So I would nominate Marty Chitty as our point person in dealing with the Crestville Mobile Home situation.
I completely agree with you, Loris, and I second, and I'm just going to underscore one more time, that this designation does not give him the authority to make any decisions or issue any directions on behalf of the board.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Further discussion? No. Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Chitty?
Abstain.
All right, Chitty abstain.
I have to vote for myself.
Thank you for taking this on. Discussion consideration of appointment to the VA Commission for a 3-year term effective 7/1/17 through 6/30/19. We've interviewed 3 people for that position, and now's the time when we appoint it.
And I'd like to address the board, too. We need to make a change for that. The end of that term, it should be 6/30 of 20.
Of 20. 6/30 of 20.
3-year term.
We count 17.
17 to 18, 18 to 19, 19 to 20. So it would end at the end of June of 20. Yep. All right. Change is made. Do we have a nomination from? We heard from 3 outstanding people, who I think all would represent us really well. Does one rise to the surface?
I would like to make a motion that we reappoint Lee Bauer. I guess I'll do that and then I'll explain why.
Sure.
I would nominate Lynn Lathrop for this chair, this seat. So we have competing nominations.
Right.
So let's see. I don't know that this exactly fits with Robert's Rules of Order, but I think it's absolutely fair, since we're doing it this way, to have a full and complete vetting. You guys have each nominated somebody else. I'm great with what you guys have nominated. I'd like to hear why. Loris, I'd like to hear why.
I listened to all 3 and settled on Lee because I was impressed with what Lee was saying about working with a program with the VA down in Des Moines to bring some services up here. And that said to me that he had a level of involvement that went beyond just attending the meetings and going to, like, the Veterans Marketplace, et cetera. I think very highly of Lynn Lathrop, okay? So there's no question that he brings a lot of experience also. My thought was is he has already served in some elected and appointed positions.
You're talking about Lynn Lathrop.
Lynn Lathrop. I just was commenting about why I did not settle on Lynn. I'd like to thank Jerry for applying. And we all know that sometimes a board or a commission can get different perspective with Jerry. So I settled after looking at all 3. Lee is where I ended up because he was taking
taking that extra step as already as a commission member, and I'd like to see what happens if he goes out for three more years.
Huh. Well, that's interesting because one of our commission members actually works for the VA, and so I took that a little differently than you do. I knew our commission was working on that, but I think our commission member that works for the VA is the one spearheading that. So that was interesting,
okay.
That's what you heard.
Okay.
Talk to me about Lynn Lathrop, Marty.
Well, I have had a surprising amount of outreach by members of the community in regards to they were watching this process take hold. You have people on the board itself in discussions that they found comfort in just offering their opinions. Lynn is a stepping away from leadership in Nevada. He has a presence and the desire to continue serving. I think the organization is made better. I was fortunate to be here as the board became 5 from 3, and I think it's working better because of it. I think the opportunity to bring fresh eyes has its own component.
Okay. Further discussion? So what I would like to do, board, with your permission, and we're in uncharted water here. This is the first time we've done something like this. I do not like, if at all possible, the idea of somebody's name coming up, us voting on it, and then failing if it's evident that we're getting to a different position. So what I'm going to suggest is this. I really appreciate what both of you said. I agree that we had three great candidates. I believe that Lynn Lathrop brings the best opportunity for the VA Commission to continue its outstanding service and collegial nature. And so of the two nominations, I would be most inclined to support Lynn Lathrop. So with that said, Loris, you nominated Lee first. If you want to make a motion to appoint Lee Bauer, go ahead and do that. If not, I'm going to turn to Marty and see if he has a motion to make. You make the choice.
I appreciate everyone sharing their thoughts. I think for this process to work, when there's a consensus or a clear preference, okay, by two of the members, to put up someone's name for nomination, that where there will likely not be a second.
Well, you did nominate him. We just haven't moved his appointment yet.
Right.
If you want to move his appointment, you go ahead and do that now.
I understand that. I'll go ahead and allow Marty to make a motion based upon your comments. So I'm not making a motion.
Perfect. Okay. Marty, you have a motion.
Thank you, Loris. I would move appointment as the new designated representative for the VA Commission as Lynn Lathrop.
Okay.
The 1st of July through the end of June 2020.
So to join the VA Commission is your motion?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Discussion. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Lynn Lathrop is the appointment. And with great thanks to the other two who applied, and additional thanks to Lee Bauer, who did an outstanding job serving the VA Commission. Deb, would you please let all three know what the decision of this board was? All right. The next item is discussion and consideration of Central Iowa RSVP's request to carry forward 2017 transportation funds to FY18. It's $2,631.78 that will not be expended in FY17. Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for coming to see us.
Yeah, you bet. Lucky.
I have Helen Peterson with me, and if you recall, just a few months ago, this board approved funding for additional transportation services offered through Central Iowa RSVP, and there was some concern at that point in time the ability to go through all or use all those funds by the end of fiscal year 17. And while we've been receiving claims and paying those since I think it was April, there are dollars that are left over that Kaylin has contacted me about and asking if the board would approve moving those forward to 2018 for the same service, the same type of use.
Super. Questions? Deb, so I believe this is an action that we've taken similar action in the past to do that. The hope and expectation of this board, I believe, is that we continue to get the services, not a arbitrary calendar date that it occurs on. Questions or comments, board?
none. We did approve the money late in the year, you know, the request, and clearly the service is still needed. Mm-hmm. So I have none.
No, this is one of those easy organizations to have the success of doing this. I wish all the transportation issues that come before us were clean cut and easy to do. So if you're making a motion, I would second it.
I am making a motion that we go ahead and transfer the $2,631.78 left from the fiscal year 17 budget into the fiscal year 18 budget for the same purpose.
You're right on a second.
Motion and a second, in whatever order we get them. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty. Aye. Sanders, aye. It passes. Thank you. Look at that. You just came right in, and now you're trying to go right back out.
Thank you all very much.
Next item is consideration and discussion of appropriating additional funds and or allowable expense for Crestview Mobile Home Park relocation assistance. So this stems out of the conversation we had last week where we approved kind of the cafeteria style items that are allowable within the $3,000. Now we directed to gather more information on what mobile homes have clear title and try to make some decision of what, if anything, the board is going to participate in removing those. Aaron, you're up. Unless Deb's up.
I think Deb's
up. Okay, Deb, you're up.
Here's the point.
We'll give this a try. Ella's on vacation, so she's entrusting us to bring forward her message. She worked diligently with Rhonda Sykes from the Treasurer's Office on identifying what the status was of mobile homes in the Crestview Park and which titles belong to who, where are we at with tax payments, that sort of thing. And so that's outlined here in this letter. We did get a list of residence names from Brett Lehmer's attorney, Mr. Talbot, and so we're using that information, too, to guide where it is we need to look at the mobile homes and whether or not those individuals are looking at moving those or demolishing. And I think because of the conversation that took place at last week's board meeting about looking at county assistance to help those individuals who own their mobile homes to demolish those so they can sort of have a clean start wherever it is that they may be moving forward, we wanted this information to be before the board and to consider whether or not there will be additional dollars available for that specific purpose or if the up to $3,000 that's already been approved in relocation funds would be used towards the demoing of mobile homes. And I know there's also conversations that are taking place in terms of folks who are considering moving their mobile homes and whether or not they're roadworthy and the things that we kind of want to be checking on before those homes actually do move. We had an incident a year ago where we helped the county paid for a mobile home to be prepped to move, and once that location had accepted the mobile home, we found out there weren't appropriate hookups for that home to move to, so the home never moved. So we want to avoid those situations and do legwork and be proactive in ensuring that homes will be transferred in the appropriate way so the tenants or the residents will have that as a longer-term housing option.
Sure. Transfer or demolish if they're right. ready to get rid of them, and it wouldn't be something hanging over their head. So so I'll just jump in and give a couple real quick thoughts that I have. One, I believe it would be wholly inappropriate to utilize taxpayer dollars to bring somebody current on their taxes. That's one. Two, if there's not clear title, if we don't know exactly who owns something, I don't know how the county could reasonably pay for anything to get done to a trailer that we don't know who owns. And three, it seems to me that we've allocated $3,000 per mobile home unit that's out there, right? Not per resident, but per unit that lives out that's out there, including those, as I understand it, that are not on the loop. So bigger than just the ones on the loop, because there's some question of whether
we've got residents not living on the water that's out there, as scary as that is. And so I'm suggesting that there's $3,000 available, and I would like to see us give those people that clearly own their trailer and have their taxes current the opportunity to use that $3,000 if they want to use part of it to move the trailer or part of it to demolish the trailer and part of it for the other list of things that we have, including first month's rent and a subsidy on rent, then we should do that. And if we start picking and choosing, somebody gets a little more because they got their name on a title somewhere, then I think we're making a mistake. Marty or Lorsch, your thoughts?
I think it's been peeling an onion, and I will, when this is all done, I will know far more than I would have ever suspected about trailer home ownership and trailer park operations. What I think, in listening, we had a gentleman that accompanied us on several of our tours of the facility back last month, that it would be his suspicion. His name's Joe, and his last name escapes me, but we've all had meetings with him that it was his belief that many of these trailers are of an age that the likelihood of being able to find a home for them is modest to minimal, if non-existent. It was also his stated belief that some of these, quite frankly, would not get to the point where the DOT would even consider them moving. So we're going to probably be left with some on the loop. I think the number that was coming out of the treasurer's office is upwards of 9 or 10 trailers that are going to be probably, the decision will be made if they can't find a home for them, quite possibly. I think it's a reasonable suspicion to expect that somebody will just abandon it outright. And that's an unfortunate thing because that leaves it on site for somebody else to deal with. I know $3,000 is a helpful amount of money, I think, just on the transportation and or the demolition. If you use $3,000 as your cap, I think you're going to take a great deal of that dollars just to move something if you can, in fact, find a home for it. But I'm also tethered to the reality that I suspect will be the case, and more than not, more of them than not, is that well, they will just be left there for somebody else to deal with. And that leaves it on us. What do we do?
Yeah, but that becomes a civil law question between the owner of the mobile home park and whoever the owner is of the mobile home, if there is a clear owner. I don't believe that that's for the county to get in the middle of. Mm-hmm. I've looked to the county attorney on that one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, for me, it's we are offering assistance. Is this an item that we want to include in the assistance that we're offering? And if so, what criteria do you have to meet to be able to utilize that in the assistance? And then a separate part of the conversation is, do we want to offer more assistance than the $3,000 that we already have out there? Laura, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are affected by the gentleman I ran into last Friday night, a week ago Friday night, who had been one of the 30 who left, took our $1,000 assistance from before, and left, and is still homeless. And I keep on thinking about that, about when is it enough? When is the money enough, or what type? And I think definitely Marty and maybe all of us know a lot more about mobile homes now. And then also in the last week, having run into the park owner out there, and he did tell me, I guess I forgot to pass this on, two of the residents have been approved to move to the park in Boone. But I suspect that it may be that even though they are approved to move, they may find it difficulty in moving their trailers and possibly will end up buying. So with all of that put in, I think $3,000 is an adequate amount, because in a best case scenario, a trailer would be able to be moved to another park. Which, therefore, it might even be more than $1,000 or $1,500 to move it, but they're being able to move their clothing. They're being able to, it's going to basically pick up and go. And they're going to have a home at the other end with a rent that's
was probably similar to what they're paying now. All right, and that's the thing overall is that I don't know that $3,000 per trailer really is going to end up being enough. Just like last year, when it was $1,000 per trailer, but I don't think putting more money into this to fix up an old mobile home is the way to go at this point.
So, Laura, what I'm hearing you say is that option two is closest to what you would be interested in. I would just ask, if you were going to make a motion like that, you would add the word or transport after the word demolition. So it would read, continue the current appropriate amount of $3,000 per occupied mobile home for relocation assistance with allowable expense to include demolition or transport of current owner-occupied mobile home with clear title and current taxes.
I would make that motion, Shelley.
I'll chase that second here in a minute. Your office seen any more? I mean, after the meeting broke up yesterday, the Crestview component of it, last week, not yesterday, there was quite a crowd out there. Carla was pushing a lot of paper around. So are you still at two people taking advantage of what we discussed, or have the numbers grown?
We ended up going out to the park then that afternoon and circulating more flyers and things like that. But no, I mean, as far as any foot traffic or anybody calling at this point, no. I think they're kind of hanging on till tomorrow is my guess, tomorrow night.
For anybody who doesn't know, meeting at just across the street from Crestview tomorrow night on George Valesso's property, public meeting, Board of Supervisors, 6 p.m. We hope to get all the residents out there.
Yeah.
That said, I would support the second option as it was presented with the words or transport.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. You guys clear on where we're adding the or transport to this? Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
G?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes option two with the addition of or transport. Next is discussion and consideration of website refresh quote between Story County and Civic Plus. I think it was more than just Laura Olson working on this, but this is listed as Laura Olson, so Laura, take it away.
Okay, I'm putting it on and discussing this because this is what the committee decided they wanted me to come and talk to you about.
Tell us who's on the committee.
Okay, let's run this, and I may look at Barb out there to get everybody, all right? We have Erica Place from Conservation, Tyler from Secondary Roads, I'm going around the table here, Paula Haberman from IT, Barb Spagback from IT, Leanne Harder from our office, we have Alyssa Wignall from our office, we have Darla Ingham from our office, okay, I'm still going around the table here, we have Melanie from Community Services, and we have Brittany from Animal Control, and okay, I could see that, oh, Emily from Planning and Development. I'm still looking around. Oh, Sheriff's Office, yes. We have Micah Anderson and Selena Rowland.
Okay.
And I believe I've taken care of everyone here, okay? Oh, no, Auditor's Office. We've had Chris have been coming, and then Shelley's on a committee, but I think her first time to attend, we've had three meetings, will be this next meeting in mid-July. Okay. Oh, there you are, right here. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. Sorry about
okay,
that.
Okay, so we have a request from the committee that you just named that we move forward with a Civic Plus redesign rather than going out to a new company. And so give us rationale, thoughts, why this is the right, why the committee felt this was the right way to head.
Right. The committee, I think I need to give a little more background information. The quote is at 24.8, but also in your quote packet, it notes $2,300 to go ahead and get a refresh every 4 years or a redesign. There was some lack of clarity about whether that $2,300 would be separate or whether it would put us into another area of our purchasing policy.
and our county purchasing policy is up to $25,000, we can just go ahead and purchase. At $25,001, we enter in where we need to make a choice of getting either putting out an RFP, which would be 3 to 4 months, most likely, to a day at the most, and then, go ahead and get at least 2 written quotes. Well, so I talked to Gary Kendall in the county attorney's office about also those options and the option of sole sourcing, which we do allow when there are some extraordinary circumstances there. So now I'm headed to your question, okay, because we had to look at all of that, all right? The reasons are, first of all, it turns out that this platform we will be moving to is one that we already use. It's what our intranet is on. So staff already has some familiarity with using this. Second of all, this is a vendor we've worked with for a long time, and they are familiar with how the county does business and the county's needs when it comes to having a website. In addition, in looking at the examples of the types of skin, if you will, that we want for this new website, the committee, as we all went around the room and gave our example of what we thought was a good website, the committee all seemed to focus, or the majority of them, on Civic Plus websites now. There were a few from a vendor that had been considered when the website first came up, and then two of us kind of liked the domain register one, but that was probably a combination in a different direction. So after we had this discussion, we came back to not knowing what the quote would be when we added in the $2,300, came back to the discussion about that we would like to sole source this if, in fact, we do go over the $25,000 for the reasons I've just given you. Those are the primary reasons. And the fourth one was that people who work often with Civic Plus feel that they get good support from Civic Plus.
Okay, so I think what I'm hearing from you is you're recommending that we approve the redesign at 24.8 and that we also enter into the recurring redesign option at $2,300 a year.
Right, correct.
We would send that through the county attorney's office to make sure it meets this sole sourcing option and that we're doing everything we're supposed to do since it sends us over the $25,000. Right. Is there an expectation of, if we approve this, who our point person with Civic Plus is going to be?
Well, the point person is going to be IT, either Paula or Barb.
Okay.
I mean, the way that the committee has been kind of structured is that Barb's in charge of the infrastructure, et cetera, okay? That the actual, the programming, if you will. Leanne Harder will be working with the content and the appearance of the skin. So there might be some times when Leanne would be working with Barb to interface.
Which would explain why it's on both of their work programs, right?
And Alyssa is going to be working with those additional modules.
Okay.
So that would be the add-ons.
Okay. You want to make a motion?
Okay. I move that we accept the quote from Civic Plus in the amount of $24,800, and also that we approve for an increase in actually what I understand will be our annual fee of $2,300 per year.
I would second that. Motion to second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. Thanks to the committee that's been working on this. This is a website. It's a great improvement over the website we had previously, but it was almost outdated the day we put it up, 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe my calendar's off. So it's time and good work in getting us to this point. Thank you, everybody.
There are two other items. You want me to save them for liaison committee updates, then?
Yeah, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
So Discussion and consideration of 2017 Story County Fair display and staffing, Leanne Harder and Rachel Wilson. So we discussed this last week. I think it was met with a favorable feeling from the board and a request that you guys come back with more details. And I think that's what we're doing now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We'd be lucky on last night to have this kind of weather to be done after this.
Yeah, it's going to be either 100 degrees or it's going to be raining sideways. One of the two. Or both.
Depending on the day. Good morning. Rachel and I are going to essentially tag team, starting off a reiteration of what was discussed last week at the board meeting with some specifics. Again, just for as a reminder, the Story County Fair for 2017 does start July 21st officially and run through July 26th. Rachel has put together a schedule that would allow Story County to staff a display running on overlapping two-hour shifts. There are about 40 different time slots that would need to be filled, and I have the proposed schedule on the next slide that we'll come to in a second. She did work with Alyssa to discuss how those shifts would be allocated, preference to begin with offered to management department heads for 1 week. And so if it was approved today, we would put an email out to the department heads and the management staff that they would fill those time slots for up through July 5th. And then after that, send it out to the remainder of the employees. The goal would be able to have all 40 time slots filled by at the latest July 17th so that we could do outreach to those employees staffing the display and have a one-on-one where the expectations are. I think that between Rachel and I, we will be down there every day to begin with to make sure everything's set up, and we can coordinate that. Employees must have the approval of their elected official or department head. If they do want to sign up for the slots, again, maximum of 2 shifts or 4 hours, counting as regular work time. Kind of similar approach with the having elected official or department head written approval as we did with the leadership Nevada request too. So it's kind of difficult to see up there. But the layout of the fair is on your left. The red X is approximately the location of where the display would be, highly dependent on the amount of rain we get. Because
yeah, it's a low area. The whole thing's a low area, but that's a particular low area.
So we may go on the other side of Doolin Pavilion, on the other side, just go across the road there to Doolin Pavilion. The Fair Association said we can basically go wherever we want. So then on the right are the shifts. I did leave that it runs through 9 p.m. because that's really when the exhibits can be left up. If I happen to be down there and talking to someone, I'll still be there. But 40 shifts, again, to management and department heads first for a week and then open up to existing staff.
Do you want to
add anything? Okay. Still your
thunder. Are there any questions? Questions or comments, board?
Where do we stay up? I mean, as we try to push out our presence and communicate our story, the natural extension is a very highly trafficked event in East Story County. And I think that you run the opportunity of taking your message to people that otherwise might not get.
Is that a motion?
That is a motion to approve the consideration of the 2017 Story County Fair Board display and staffing.
As presented.
As presented.
Second. Outstanding. Motion and a second. Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you, guys. Good job pulling all this together. Next item is discussion consideration of Cornerstone to Capstone annual review process and schedule. Leanne Harder and Jerry Moore.
Morning. Morning, Jerry.
Jerry, how you doing?
Doing good. You?
I'm doing great.
Wouldn't be meeting without you.
It is actually extremely hard to believe that it was over a year ago that the C2C plan was adopted. It was adopted by the board officially on June 6, 2016, described by everyone that was to be a living document and really have a life of its own. Following the adoption of the C2C plan, staff, mostly the project team, and Jerry, Mike Cox, Darren, Deb, and myself, as well as other entities, were charged with coming up with strategies to really bring that plan to fruition. So the implementation matrix was brought forth for approval, following a recommendation by the Story County Conservation Board and Planning and Zoning Commission in November 2016. The image on the right-hand side of the screen is a screenshot from the C2C's implementation matrix. It does say we're going to be checking in every year. This, I think Ricky said a couple times, this is our report card of how successful we are being with the vision and goals in the C2C plan and the associated documents and strategies. Just a note under the time frame, the items that are coming before you that are on my work program, Jerry's planning and development work program, others, are really the immediate, and those were adopted in 0 to 2 year time frame from November, so to 2018. What we have before you today is really kind of the kickoff for this annual review of the C2C plan. I have a proposed schedule, and then just briefly walk through. Obviously, today address the schedule and the process that we've laid out. If it is approved, we'll go ahead and distribute information to the project team, really get their feedback. They're the ones that are in the trenches. Really.
Who is the project team?
Project team would be planning and development with Jerry, Mike Cox, Darren Moon, myself, Deb Shouldroth. And then we did have Drew Camp on, so I'm assuming Brenda would probably get the economic prosperity as well as Drew. And then we had Kelly from City of Ames, but I think his involvement is just pretty minor.
Okay.
He did kind of fall off towards the end because of other responsibilities
for
City of Ames. The next slide, we'll get to the expectations of what the project team will do, but then on July 3rd, we'll release the survey, the exact same survey that was done in 2015. When we did it in 2015, we said, and when the implementation matrix was adopted, said we're going to use the same thing.
Yep.
And MSA, who is our consultant, Al Vankeny, on the C2C plan, has very graciously allowed us to host it on their SurveyMonkey Pro, free of charge. Do the analysis for this first go-around. That will then set the basics for community indicators, which will come back to you on July 11th. And then August 7th through the 17th, we'll be compiling the survey results. And I'll bring those back to the board August 22nd. If at that point the survey results are showing, based on the community indicators, there's a divergence in the vision and goals of the C2C plan, for whatever reason, unless it's just like a 1%. Maybe we issued one more building permit than we expected, according to indicators. But if there's a substantial divergence, the rest of the schedule is moot at that point, because we need to take a step back and find out what's going on. But this expects best-case scenario that the survey results are going to be similar to that we experienced in 2015. With that, the Planning and Zoning Commission would review the annual report, followed up on September 6th, followed up by the Conservation Board on September 18th, and then brought to you on September 26th. Again, back in October, in August, if that survey causes heartburn and we have concern, we'll have a new schedule at that point. And then from that, we'll Jerry's office and myself and possibly others will do that C2C tour of schools and school districts. And
just to let them know how we're doing, what we're seeing.
Our check-in was really too soon to go out when we had just had the implementation matrix adopted in November and really didn't have anything to share for success. The evaluation criteria, if you want to call it that, is on that screen, and it is extremely small to read for the audience, and I apologize. It's okay on my screen, by the way, but it was on the packet as well. The The item as an example is just simply what I'll distribute to all the project team members. They'll have these three levels of questions, reviewing the goals and major recommendations in C2C plan. Were they accomplished? Are they still relevant? Or should it be a high priority for the year? Reviewing the implementation matrix and the progress towards completing the first year's priorities. Again, accomplished, still relevant. It's a task for the upcoming year, which would include next steps and who is responsible, and then tasks for future year. It may be listed as immediate, and we want to shift that to medium projects. Again, next steps and responsibility on that. And then just some general questions, a check-in. How many land use decisions, how many rezonings have we had? Are they consistent with the land use and goals and vision, land use tracker and goals and vision C2C plan? Are we adopting regulations that are in line, or are we going at odds with what the vision and goal is? And that's what that final column is. So with that, do you have anything you want to add?
Other than it's hard to believe that it's been 2 years since that survey was sent out and that we received input, so it's probably a good thing that we get that out there to see if we've got any new information, new shifts that we need to consider to go forward. But I don't think we're anticipating any great...
Well, that's why we do it, though. We do it. We may not anticipate it, but we do it so we can see if it happens. So C2C plan was a phenomenal effort by so many people, and there was substantial buy-in from all over the county. And I believe that the day that it was finalized and approved, it was an outstanding plan. But it only has relevance if we keep taking it out and doing some analysis on it. How are we doing? How is the community doing? Is the community changing? And so I'm so appreciative you're doing this. I look at Wayne and I think about the first time I sat down in one of these chairs, Story County, so that's 2010, Story County doing a full-scale comprehensive plan was one of my huge priorities. And the reality is, the way this all works, it took, it was 18 months before we got any momentum at all to even do the foundational elements to get here, starting with the CPAD and everything we had to do to get here. And so ultimately, taking us over 5 years, really pushing hard to get here, I think is a note of how things work in government. But it's exciting that we're here and exciting now that we're taking the first swipe at seeing what impacts we're having, what changes we're seeing, and are we following our own plan. So I'm just appreciative of you guys bringing it forward. I like the schedules you've laid out. I think it's appropriate to note that if we get survey results that we don't expect, it could change the rest of the schedule. But for me, it's really, really solid. Marty or Wars?
No, I'd say just the fact you're choosing to re-engage the county to expect what a survey would give you on the document. I suspect that quite possibly, I'm not looking for any surprises, but you take what you get.
Sure.
We get in a timeline to how we will re-engage with the communities, and I think that we're on the jumping off point, and I'll move consideration here in a moment here, but I'd like to hear if Laura says anything else.
Mm-hmm. I just, under the general review questions checklist for review, diamond three, I guess it is, have there been any instances when the Story County Conservation Board, Planning, Zoning Commission, or the Board of Supervisors departed from the plan? And I don't know that there'll be much for the first year. It'll be interesting to see in subsequent years as pressure of more growth out of hearings come to see how that ends up kind of flowing.
I think that's a great point. Okay. So is there a motion?
I move consideration of our Cornerstone Capstone annual review process and the schedule as it was presented.
I second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Jerry or Lee, anything to finish us off? Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. We'll look forward to working our way through the schedule. Next is discussion and consideration of amendments to the Story County Facade Grant Improvement Program. Leanne. This is the Leanne show.
Well, this agenda item follows up on a discussion 2 or 3 weeks ago by the board that occurred under other reports for potential changes to the facade improvement grant program. And just jump in there. The proposed changes were highlighted in the packet for the board meeting, and the language proposed to be stricken was removed, shown the strikeouts, and that he added with underline and red font. Just in summary, under the eligibility section, specifically where it talks about allowable awards. We do this annually. We change the dates because it does run on a fiscal year basis. And then I did speak with Lisa Markley, and she and I agreed it would be appropriate to add that for the board to discuss language that would say an applicant may only submit and receive funding for one application each fiscal year. During the meeting, I did email Lisa. We suggest if the intention of the board with these amendments would be that a city can only apply and receive funding, can only apply and or receive funding for one application once per year, fiscal year, it should be an and or. Because the way this is worded, they could submit, not receive funding, and then resubmit again. So,
is that a bad thing?
That's for the board to...
So it could be either. It could be we say if you submit and receive funding, you can only do it once. It depends on what our goal is, right? If our goal is to help our smallest communities improve themselves and they submit one that doesn't work, I would be really hesitant to say, no, you can't propose something else for you.
That latter point is really what this does allow.
Okay.
They submit and receive funding for that particular application.
Yeah. I liked it as it was worded in here. I'm hearing you now say something different than that.
Yeah, whether or not, I want to point out whether or not that was the board did intend. And then under eligibility for eligible applicants, just adding eligible properties and or businesses. It just said businesses. This goes back to the discussion that businesses are not always identified, so at least properties and government entities may be the necessary applicant or property owner. So again, that's in two instances. We did take out under eligible properties, it did say eligible properties are owners of commercial properties and are owner-managers of businesses. Took out owners of commercial properties and or owner-managers of businesses based on the board's discussion. Then under ineligible, under eligibility still, but ineligible properties were defined, and we did remove 501c3 nonprofit organizations and government buildings so that cities could apply in that capacity.
Okay.
And then application deadline just generally seemed awkward, so removed that, and then did clarify that work is expected to be completed within 12 months of the that was always covered in the cover letter, but
not put in here. Yep. Okay, questions or comments for Leanne as we consider changes to the grant program?
None. I think she caught what we wanted.
I would dovetail on what you said. I would think that, and we've seen in applications that have come to us just in our time here, that they weren't quite written in a way that I think should disqualify them. That if the monies weren't are already awarded and they were available, that the communities would have the ability to come back and resubmit an application. So I have comfort with what I see here.
Super. Do I get a motion from one of you guys, since you're both comfortable with it?
I move that we accept the changes in the Story County Facade Improvement Grant Program and enact them with fiscal year 18.
Second. Super. We got a motion, second. Further discussion? Leanne, anything to add?
No, I'll get the changes made officially and placed on the website and distribute to all the cities that are eligible under that population cap.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Next item is discussion and consideration of Resolution 17-112, and it's our first chance to have Ms. Weber come up and present to us. And you go ahead and get started, and I'll be right back.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is a proposal for a residential parcel subdivision. This is case SUB07-17, the Vanderwall Residential Parcel Subdivision. The applicant is Dale and Mari Vanderwall of Maxwell, Iowa, and the property today under consideration is in Section 10 of the Indian Creek Township. So more specifically, the location is 1.9 miles north of the city of Maxwell and about 4 miles northwest of the city of Collins. So as for the zoning and surrounding land use, the property is located in the A1 Agricultural Zoning District. A portion of the property is designated natural resource area, but the county does have a drainage easement that has been added to the plat. There are about 9 parcels within half a mile that have single-family dwellings, and several parcels within half a mile that meet or exceed the 35-acre minimum for a single-family dwelling in the A1 district. North of the drainage easement, the land is used as pasture, and there are agricultural row crops in the southwest corner. Just some background on the property. The parcel, proposed lots 1 and 2, was first split from the original quarter-quarter in 1993 through a plot of survey to create parcel C, which contained the existing farmstead. That plot of survey was amended then in 1998 to include the northwest 3.65 net acres. And then the original farmstead on parcel C was replaced with a new single-family dwelling in 2000. So here we have the proposed subdivision. Lot 1 is 17.51 net acres, and proposed lot 2 in the northeast corner is 1.14 net acres. So here we have the plat of the Vanderwall subdivision. As you can see again, there's lots 1 and 2. And the southeast corner of lot 1, you can see the existing single-family dwelling, as well as the drainage easement that runs across the center of lot 1. Here I have just a few photos of the property. So here's looking north at the residential dwelling and detached garage on lot 1. Looking northeast at the garage and barn on lot 1. Looking northeast at the barn. Looking northeast at the shed west of the residential dwelling on lot 1. Looking north at the agricultural row crops in the southwest corner of lot 1. Looking south across 295th Street, south of lot 1. Looking west down 295th Street, looking east down 295th Street, looking south down 616th Avenue, and to the right there you can see the drainage easement. This is looking onto the drainage easement on proposed lot 1. Looking southwest from 660th Avenue towards the drainage easement on lot 1. Now this is the common lot line of proposed lots 1 and 2. To the north there, you can see lot 1, and to the south, lot 2. This is looking northwest onto lot 2 from 660th Avenue. North of proposed lot 2, along 660th Avenue there. Looking east across 660th Avenue from lot 2. And the subdivision did meet all of Story County's land development regulations. Only are the intent for both lots are for residential purposes. Only 2 lots are being created. There was an existing single-family dwelling. And the subdivision does lie wholly within the A1 district. Both lots meet the minimum net acre of 1 net acre each. Both properties have road frontage, and no variances were granted to accomplish the subdivision. We did receive a couple comments from the interagency review team. The Story County Engineering Department just required that a driveway permit be obtained from their office for lot 2. Story County Conservation was mainly concerned with the drainage easement and asked that a couple modifications be addressed on the plat, and those modifications were addressed. The Planning Department was mainly concerned with a couple of the different uses on proposed lot 1. Notice letters were sent out to property owners within a fourth of a mile of the proposed subdivision on June 21st regarding this meeting, and no comments were received. So some analysis here. Several single-family homes are in close proximity to the property. The proposed residential parcel subdivision fits in with the existing single-family dwellings and the character of the area. There are 20 parcels in the area without dwellings that are eligible to obtain a zoning permit for the construction of a single-family dwelling. A portion of the property is designated natural resource area, but no development will occur within this designation. Access to proposed lot 1 will remain along 295th Street, and proposed lot 2 has frontage along 660th Avenue. No land will be taken out of agricultural row crop production. Both lot 1 and lot 2 meet the minimum requirements of 1 net acre each, and the property is not located within a floodplain. And so the planning and development staff recommend the approval of the Vanderwall Residential Parcel Subdivision Plat as proposed, which is alternative one.
Super job. Outstanding. Thanks. Questions?
Nothing. Very straightforward.
And really well presented.
I thought she did a wonderful job the first time out. Thank you.
So if there's no questions, I take a motion on Resolution 17-112.
Move consideration of Resolution 17-112 for the Vanderwall Residential Parcel Subdivision.
I second.
So a motion on 17-112 as presented. Further discussion? Anything to add? Really nice first time out. Fair. Good job.
Thank you.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 17-112 passes. No departmental reports today, no other reports. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics that are not on today's agenda. Board may not take any action due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we might take action in the future. Anybody wish to address us on any topic at this point? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. Loris.
Okay, we had started talking about the website refresh / redesign committee earlier. There are a couple of other developments there. The committee discussed options to reach out to external users, and the committee settled on a six-facet approach. This includes place an electronic survey on our website using a flashing banner on the homepage and each department's homepage, landing page, to ask people to complete it. It was utilize all the county department's various social media pages to promote the survey several times during the survey period. Also, the committee voted for a solicit completion of the survey via the various departments' client / vendor / consumer email list. Create mini surveys to put in the comment boxes and place the boxes at the county's five buildings with the most public traffic. Also, the two contact department staff most in contact, and when we say department, we're talking about departments, yeah. Okay, staff most in contact with the public and get more input from them than contained in the internal survey that everyone got. Ask the municipalities to publicize their surveys via posters at the city hall, the library, and the public service notices in their newsletters. So that's the approach that we're going to try and use to reach our approaches to reach out to the public. Also, the treasurer's office and the planning department, who have already talked to IT, want to launch a blog on the intranet site. And that would be focused on planning and interagency review only. So it would be strictly for comments related to the plats, the recorder's office, or sorry, the treasurer's office, or was it recorder? Recorder, right? Yeah, recorder, thank you. Okay, recorder's office, thank you, Emily. And the planning department, that they put out the interagency reviews. And they brought it to the committee for permission.
Uh-huh.
And the reason they did that is that when the intranet was installed, apparently some of the suggestions were to do blogs that were personally related, buy, sell, swap on the intranet, one about sharing photos, I believe I was told about second, third hand. So Alyssa brought up in that meeting that blogs were allowed if they were to be county related, to business related. Okay, so somehow that got misinterpreted among employees to think we could not do any blogs on the internet. So anyway, that's what apparently they're going to try and do, is see if that's working out and if it is limited to the use.
Yeah, so anybody can do a personal blog as they so choose, right? That's their First Amendment right. They just can't do it on a county platform. County platform is for county business, not personal business.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to animal control. The animal control contract for fiscal year 2018, the committee met to was, in this case, Sue McCaskey, Ethan Anderson, Deb Shildroth, and myself.
And we went through the contract. We made some changes that hopefully will be coming to you next week. We're waiting, I think Ethan's a little busy these days, so it might be another week before those changes get out. Basically, we added clarity of language of the city's responsibilities before animal control. We provide a written letter or go out and do a visit to home. And we removed a fee for that because it's not, according to us, not being collected anyway, and it's a good PR to work with the cities. Also, Deb, Loris, and Sue are going to schedule a meeting the last few days to go over spreadsheets. We've asked in the last year that we take a look at all of our guests, our residents, as we call them, taking a look at their longevity, when they've been in, when they've been adopted. I took a quick scan at that, and it looked like we did have a good adoption rate for those that even have stayed for more than a year, for the cats especially. But we're going to go over that, and then we're also going to take a look at the rate for our current guests. Deb and Ethan and I are going to road trip to the shelter within the next week or two, and we're going to meet with Sue and her staff to get their suggestions for changes to the animal control ordinance as we begin to move forward on that. Central Iowa Regional Housing Authority had an annual meeting that I attended. Vanessa Baker-Latimer is the representative, the de facto representative for Story County officially. She represents the city of Ames. That had to do with an agreement that the county and the city participated in at the time that the city shut down their Section 8 voucher program. And it was very important to the city of Ames that they give Vanessa on the actual executive board of this agency. As a result, the contract was changed a little bit. Vanessa is possibly interested in taking the city of Ames out of it again and returning it back to Story County.
But that would take council action.
That would take council action and I believe board action. She's referred it over to their legal department since they're the ones that drafted it. Another way to go might be just for us to sub in somebody else or for them to sub in someone else, and I would say the alternate. There are several options there available. I'm just letting you know about that now. Also, Vanessa and I and Brenda Dreyer, who's gone, we've been talking about the Story County Ames Housing Needs Assessment Survey. It's been 19 years since the county/Ames has had an assessment survey. I made some initial calls to talk to a couple of the people who would do this, or the firms. The guesstimate, based upon what we had done in 1998, was $60,000 to $70,000. Of course, the question is, does the county want to look at considering paying for this all, or would we want to share it with the city? So I reached out to Steve Shanker and asked what would be the process for that, if in fact the Board of Supervisors would like to have a partnership with the city, and Steve said that the Board of Supervisors should send a letter to the City Council. So I'll be putting that on the July 11th agenda to ask if we would like to discuss a partnership to go ahead and do the survey in conjunction. Now, and then there would be a task force form. This is a long process.
Right. So you're now talking about something that we're going to consider on a future agenda.
I'm sorry.
Yes, so
okay.
Let's just be all really right. Careful.
Certainly. Okay.
And absolutely, Lars, I think you're handling it exactly right. Get it on our agenda. If we're the ones that have to consider something, get it on our agenda, and then we'll move forward rather than moving forward and then getting it on our agenda.
Got it. I'm figuring out the rules. Okay, Deb Shildroth and I took a tour of the unused half of the Story County Medical Center North Campus as a possible short-term housing solution for the Crestview mobile home residents. This is something that, you know, we think out of the box sometimes. I think we're all out of the box in the bubble here. But they've got a lot of vacant space. This particular side of it is newer. It has no asbestos in it. So it was the old clinic and for the hospital, and as a result, it's got plumbing in everywhere, like every other room.
Again, so I think fascinating. Here's my concern there. I don't think that Story County has ever considered owning public housing.
Right.
I don't think it's in our C2C plan.
Right.
I don't think it's in Deb's job description.
Right. Okay.
And I would just, again, it feels like we're putting the cart ahead of the horse. If this is something you want us to consider, let's consider it before we start doing things that are outside any standard practice, anything in the C2C plan that's directing us, because public housing is not something that I see anywhere.
That is correct, yes. And in fact, we went just to look also, would this be something that might be able to then be used by this transitional housing with access to the RPYFS Salvation Army, and Deb is contacting all those, you know, they're forming their own, like, kind of cooperative region, all right? And so Deb is going to talk to them, especially ERP, because they usually take the lead in something like, you know, if they're going to do transitional housing, that's a big agency. So anyway, yes, I agree with that. We're not
trying to get into public housing. Yeah, so I would encourage real caution from our staff in taking on anything that's not part of our C2C plan, that's not part of standard practice, and that's not part of your job description before the board has an opportunity to weigh in on it.
Okay. Right. Okay. So, moving on, HRDA, a couple of things on transportation. I did attend one of the public information meetings in Boone, just to remind everybody that the Boone Transit Company is going to quit serving the Boone County as of January 1st, and HRDA itself, who is going to actually provide that. I sit on the HRDA board. It's of importance to us because Boone is our next-door neighbor, and dispatching is going to be done out of Ames, at least initially. There's also, it's encouraging, it sounds like they've been able to hire drivers well, but I am going to continue to track this. I think probably Deb's going to be involved in tracking part of this because of the contract we have with HRDA regarding some particular human service agencies related. And the good news is they are looking at doing a shuttle between Ames and Boone, so that there will be actually transportation that way. Okay. Community Family Resources, just an update since the board has interacted with them in the past. We approved a fiscal year 18 budget, and much the cash position is much different than it was several years ago. There is now $3 million in the bank, actually 3.5 or 6. $1 million of that is comes from donations for the capital campaign, but certainly there. And finally, I want to say thank you to the Story County Amateur Radio Club, the ham operators. They had participated in a contest for the North America Field Day, and I went out to Hickory Grove. I believe we all three were invited, and I was the one able to do that. By the way, the first elected official to appear out there was worth 100 points in this contest. Making a call, I did make a call, talked to somebody in Alabama, that was only worth 1 point. I did not stay to make another 99 points for them. So anyway, that's my update of activities in the
past. Outstanding. Thank you, Marty.
Taking note of the conversation we had earlier, we have a grassroots meeting tomorrow night. I hope we can get some resolutions and people moving into a new chapter in their life. That said, had a wonderful Engage meeting with Jason Paul and the Amos housing team last night. Deb Shildroff was there with me. We kind of laying out where we were as far as a snapshot of time on the moving forward. Second Judicial met up in Webster City Friday last week, and we had a rather long meeting taking into account the changes in Iowa law, particularly the Chapter 20 redo and the budgeting dollars. Got a lot of things started for the new fiscal. We are in the presently, and at 1 o'clock we'll be having another interview, which I don't know if I'll get to, of the 911 consultation interviews for purchasing the likely purchase of a new technology formatting for our 911 system throughout the county. It, the technology is from 1986. It's time to be moving on this. The ICS meeting last Thursday, we were moving into the new fiscal. I was elected as the new vice chair. We have a co-op meeting here, or a water, or the conservation is putting on a demonstration at the co-op here later this afternoon. I'd like to think I can get out there. And last but not least, I was asked to join the Ames Boys and Girls Club's board, and I accepted.
I'll say you didn't have enough to do, so that's...
Coming off the school board, somebody saw a little free time in my schedule.
Half the battle of this job is being able to say no, Marty. That's...